This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
The orange ribbon is the symbol used across Australia to represent multiculturalism, anti-racism, and international understanding. Today we're talking with Alina and Catherine, a bicultural couple from very different backgrounds. We'll explore what it means to negotiate their two cultures and focus in on how people with different backgrounds deal with issues around childbearing, because Alina and Catherine are the proud parents of 15-month-old Elliot, who's also here in the studio with us. If you have comments on the program or to ask questions, you can SMS us on 0427JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au. So just to get started with the program, can you give us a bit of a quick summary of your lives together as a couple? Just the outline of important dates and events that have brought you to this moment of child rearing.
This moment in particular of the Very, Very Hungry Caterpillar book.
This moment in particular, exactly.
We started dating in September 2005. Yeah, so not really that long ago. It doesn't feel that long ago.
Oh yes, it feels very long ago.
We've already got a difference of opinion on how in long it way. Feels.
Depends on the day. But we've sort of done so much in that time. That
indeed,
it sort of feels like a very condensed 5 years, mm-hmm. or 5.5 years.
So how did you meet?
We met through a mutual friend.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and I was only a few months out of a previous relationship, so I certainly wasn't looking for love, and was definitely planning on not finding love for a few months or a few years even later. But, you know, love never comes on time. Isn't that a song?
I fell hard and I chased her, and it took forever for her to realise that I was chasing her.
Okay.
That's so I wasn't quite dealing with the good Muslim girl. She misled me into believing she might be.
Oh. How did you lead her down that incorrect garden path?
Well,
persistence.
Yes, that's probably one of my strongest, one of my strong character, I'm going to say traits, is that I am persistent.
Okay.
And I've always had a list of what I want in a partner, and people generally can tick off, you know, maybe 5 to 6 things in it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's, and it's completely appropriate for the show, that's very important to me, is I've always wanted a partner who understands the importance of family, of cultural identity, of ethnic belief or origin, or how you choose to identify with that. And I've never actually able to get that with, I'll say it, a white girl.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've always thought, no, it's not gonna happen. But Catherine's proven me wrong.
You found an Anglo who understands.
Absolutely.
How did you get to that point, Catherine?
Well, family, culture aside, family's always been really sort of integral to my life. Mm-hmm. I've got a very small family. It's really just my mother and my brother and I.
Mm-hmm.
And the three of us, you know, have lived together and have always been very, very close and supportive. So it's always been important to me to be with somebody who respects the importance of that quality time, as an extended family, but also by ourselves. It's still important for me to spend one-on-one time with my mum and my brother and sometimes the three of us, just to kind of, just keep that little unit, I suppose, because it's been really the focus, I think, for the three of us in many respects, even though we've each got our own partners and my brother's got his own family as well. And, it's just a thread that I never wanted to let go. So it was really important to me as well to have somebody who was close to their family, because then they understand and there's no kind of tension or conflict around that.
Yep. So how did you spot it in Catherine that she was an atypical Anglo?
Well, I think by the fact that when we first started dating, and I have a cousin who lives here in Melbourne, and even though he's my first cousin, but I think of him as a brother. And I remember saying something to her about, oh, she wanted to meet up one night, and I've got Elliot trying to grab the mic out of my hands right now. He wants to speak.
A star.
He thinks he's a star.
He is a star.
Sorry, Catherine's correcting me. Yes. I think, and I said to her that I wanted to meet up with her. However, I had to have dinner with my cousin first,
mm-hmm.
and it was something like a Friday night or a Saturday night, and we had just early days started dating. But I knew that he was feeling pretty lonely because his family live overseas.
Okay,
and I said to her that, look, I really do want to see you, but it will have to be after dinner,
mm-hmm.
or it'll have to be a lot earlier in the day. And in the past, when I've told new partners that I've got a family commitment, it's always been a bit of a, oh, you've got to choose me over them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always ends disastrously, and not because I choose family, just because I don't like being put in that position. I don't think it's fair. I'd never ask someone to choose for me, so how can I be asked? And I think when I said to her that I can't meet up, and her response was very much, well, that's fine, I'm happy to meet after. And it wasn't an issue. And I think it was that at that point the penny dropped, and it said to me that, well, if she's not going to get upset over this, this means that there might be a chance for us.
Mm-hmm.
I should definitely explore it with mm-hmm. her.
Well, that's a great story, and it perhaps gives us a moment to go into our first track. So I'm going to put the music on, and then we will come back, and I'll ask you why you've picked this particular track, and then we can keep talking. So thank you for listening. You're on Joy 94.9.
SMS 0427 Joy 949. I tremble.
0427 Joy 949.
We are back with Alina, Catherine, and Elliot on Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9. And we've just listened to a track from the Fisher-Price World Baby Collection, Peaceful Celtic Lullabies. So tell me, one of you, why that song? What was it? And B, why that one?
Well, this was actually given to us by my brother-in-law. He insisted that his daughter slept really well with it. And we, in the first few days, we had a bit of a tough time trying to get Elliot to sleep, as all newborns. But we figured, oh, well, it can't harm. So we played this and we put it on repeat, actually, all night. And we noticed that it's all instrumental. And we noticed that it actually did work. And since then, we've gotten quite a few other CDs that we play in the night. We do play mm-hmm. music for him to sleep. Catherine gets annoyed, though, when I put it on repeat because she starts coming in at work or during the day and asks me not to. But for a long time, we weren't able to actually play the CD because we listened to it so much in the first 3 months of his birth that we just couldn't play it. So it's only just been allowed back into the
repertoire.
Player. And that particular track is and a lot of people know this, is My Bonnie Lies Over the Ocean, which has historical significance for whiteys, in fact.
Now that's just stretching it a little bit, I think.
Yeah. Oh, but it's Scots.
You have to be Scottish, yeah. Hugh would understand. One of the fellow presenters on Orange Ribbon is from Scotland. So now that we've covered the music and we've talked a little bit about how family is important to both of you, you're from different backgrounds. What are those backgrounds and how have you negotiated those identities?
My ethnicity is Pakistani.
Okay.
And I identify...
And you grew up in Australia?
No and yes. I came here when I was 3 years old.
Okay.
I left when I was 11, came back at 20. That's nearly 15 years ago. So I actually identify as Pakistani-Australian.
Okay.
But I also identify as queer Muslim as well.
Okay.
Which is a important part of my identity as well.
Mm-hmm. And so what did it... Oh, you've walked away.
This is the thing about being a parent. You can walk away and come back.
And come back. What did it mean for you growing up in your various places? When you left, you went back to Pakistan?
Yep, and it was difficult because I was 10 and thought I was an Australian kid. And, people in Pakistan would alternate between saying, you belong here too, you don't belong here, we don't understand your accent.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't easy coming back here at 20 as well and not knowing where I fit, whether I was Pakistani or Australian. In fact, it's probably only been in the last 10 years or so that I have felt comfortable saying Pakistani-Australian and not kind of taking a bit of a breath after,
mm-hmm.
wondering, do I have to justify it? Do I really feel it? Why am I even saying it?
Yep. Yeah.
So, but I'm in a happy space about that now.
Congratulations. I'm certainly It's not exactly a rare feat, but it is quite difficult to come from a non-dominant culture, especially one that's so different from Anglo-Australia, and to have integrated, not assimilated, but integrated the two together into one cohesive whole.
And thank you. And I think probably it's even been harder, because using the word integrated is a really good word, because for me, I've never wanted to just assimilate. Like, there are certain things in Pakistani culture that I love. I mean, we had a wedding and I insisted on dancing, which you normally do if you're a bride yourself, but there are always dancers dancing at Pakistani or Indian weddings. And my sister and I performed a Bollywood dance number at it. I actually had to get out of my suit into an outfit and get back into the suit later. But that's because they were things that I really wanted to still have. Even though I knew that I was going to be having a wedding in Australia, I wanted to still have that kind of Pakistani influence.
Yeah. You mentioned being queer Muslim as well, and so I was going to ask you how you've brought together your ethnic and sexual identities. And so you've given us a word for it, but what does it mean to live it?
Oh, look, I mean, I've got, I think I'm one of the very few lucky people. I say few because, unfortunately, there's not a lot of people who are able to be out like I am, and I'm able to be out for a couple of reasons. One, not just because I'm sure of myself, and that's not it. It's because I have family support. Mm-hmm. I mean, my parents aren't ever going to join PFLAG. They're both Pakistani, and for them, that doesn't represent their world. Mm-hmm. But they came to my wedding, and my father adores Elliot and is his grandfather. Mm-hmm. You know, he calls him his grandson, and my mum is completely devoted to Catherine and Elliot. So I think for me, the Muslim part has always been a bit of a cultural thing. It's always been a bit of a spiritual thing, but because I've chosen to retain it and keep my sexual identity, I think it's been an interesting journey. It's not been easy, and that's probably for another show and another day, and I have talked about this heaps in the past, but I facilitate the Queer Muslims in Australia Yahoo group, and okay. I get support from that, and I provide support from that group as well.
All right. Well, now you two have to tag team, because I want to talk to Catherine about sort of parallel things, and it's not very common, actually, that Anglos get asked about their ethnicity.
No, it's not. It's like, ethnicity? Do I have one?
Let's start first. Let's go back. You, I'm assuming, had quite a different childhood from Alina.
Yes. I think probably for a few reasons. One, you know, I mean, Alina spent most of her formative years in Karachi, Pakistan. Okay. So, you know, environment a little bit different to Coburg, Melbourne.
A little bit.
Just a tad. Grew up surrounded by extended family. As I said, I've got a really small family, just mum and my brother and me. So there's that kind of difference as well. There are some class differences too. You know, growing up, we were sort of a maybe working class to kind of lower middle class family, whereas, you know, in Pakistan, Alina's family are, you know, a much kind of higher class family too. So there are those sort of issues that permeate, the, you know, the relationship as well.
Yep. There's a word that they use in Pakistan called the educated elite.
Okay.
And it's a word to describe in my family, if you don't go to university, you're actually looked down upon. There's this snobbery about being a tradie or doing anything. If you use your hands, it must be in sport. Now, growing up in that world means I am absolutely useless when it comes to, like, trying to fix anything. If something needs to be fixed, my attitude is call the plumber, call the carpenter, call whoever.
Oh.
little man wants to get his time on air as well. So I think, there were major differences in how we approach things. I would say things without realizing just how snob-like what I was saying. And it wasn't coming from a bad place. It just, obviously, you know, your environment and where you grow up influences your thoughts, whether you like it or not. And it was good to be with someone like Catherine, who was so grounded and so comfortable in her skin that she could actually just challenge me and say, well, if you look down on, you know, people who, you know, who are tradespeople, well, you know, I have, you know, family people who, you know, I have a grandfather who was a butler. How do you feel about that? And I was instantly like, shock, horror, a butler? And then I had to challenge.
Whereas your family probably had butlers.
Yeah, unfortunately, we'll just move over that one. But I had to actually, you know, I challenge myself into what's so horrible about being in love with someone whose family isn't fitting this perfect picture of what you want your family to be married to.
Yep. Class is such an interesting distinction. But let's come back, and I'm really glad that you did go there, because we don't often go down the class road here on Orange Ribbon, and I've always sort of hoped that we could, so thank you.
Yeah.
But I also want to ask about... what is your ethnic identity? Like, Anglo is Anglo, but
yeah.
As we pointed out, if you're not Scottish, you're Bonnie Prince Charlie.
Yeah, it doesn't mean much to me. Gosh, I think, both my parents are English.
Mm-hmm.
So
English or English-Australian English?
English.
Yep.
came to Australia, I think, in their 20s.
Yep. 10-pound palms.
Yeah. I think my father had a 2-year work contract or something, and then they had my brother, and then it was all over. They decided to stay here. So I think that sort of culture has always been... I mean, my mum's very English.
Okay.
Not in the sort of teacups and doilies sense, just... Yeah. You know, if I did something silly as a kid, I was a daft sausage, or, you know, just kind of the language he's.
Yep.
And the scary thing is, I hear myself saying the same things to Elliot now. It's like, oh my God. My grandmother, on my mum's side, was a German Jew refugee as a child.
Okay.
So that's never been something that's really been explicitly explored within our little family unit, but it's there.
Yep.
And it's something that we talk about every now and then.
Yep.
And I think my mum in particular every now and then sort of maybe wishes we had more knowledge about that.
Yep.
Because my grandmother kind of put it to one side when she went to the UK as a kid and just became English.
Yep.
And we've lost, I think, a lot of that history and knowledge and background. But it's if you know it's there, it's kind of... It's always still there,
yeah,
and you sort of think,
yeah,
well, if I ever wanted to, I could kind of learn more about that and tap into that.
She brings it out every now and then, my mother-in-law, when she tries to make chicken soup. She calls it Jewish penicillin.
Indeed.
In terms of how I would identify, I would just say I'm an Australian.
Yep.
And then, yeah, if it's a conversation, then I'll kind of go into more detail about the family history.
Have you been asked, or has it come up more for you being with a partner who's from a non-dominant culture in our society to sort of have to reflect on what it means to come from the dominant culture?
Yeah, probably. And probably just kind of having that awareness to make space for things that weren't things that I grew up with.
Yep.
Even just down to her family sent down some traditional dress for Elliot. I don't know the correct words, but the torpi is the hat, and an udrak, which is like a men's shawl or a men's scarf, you know.
Okay.
And it was really strange, because when I looked at him wearing it, it was like, wow, like, you know, I never imagined that my son would be wearing stuff like this, you know. But on the other hand, I find it really kind of amazing that he's going to have that. It wasn't something that I grew up with. And, you know, when we had multicultural day at school, you know, I was probably one of the, you know, maybe 3 white kids in the class.
In Coburg.
And everyone else seemed to have these, you know, interesting kind of outfits and foods they could bring. And I was like, oh, Mum, what can I take? And it would always be something, you know, really boring. Like, oh, so.
Carrots boiled.
That's right.
Day.
Yeah. So it's kind of cool that he's going to have that. So I'm really excited about that for him. And I sort of feel like I get to have some as well by default.
Yeah, live vicariously.
That's right.
One thing, because Elliot has my surname and he's also being raised Muslim, it's interesting to watch Catherine getting so defensive about the spelling and pronunciation of his name, and basically making sure he's not getting any pork at, you know, or ham or wherever, because I am quite strict about that. And it's interesting because she's taken on all of that, you know, a lot more now that we have a son who basically has my, he has my ethnicity as well. And I can see how Catherine, as mum, and I'm mama, is trying really hard and has done a really good job of basically making my family feel that he is very much their grandchild, although mm-hmm. he's born from her, not from me, but that hasn't affected the way they view him. He also does have the same olive skin as me, but...
Indeed he does. To look at him, you wouldn't guess who Mum is.
No, you can't. Everyone thinks that I've given birth, and I never will, but it is, I think it's... and I can be a little bit superstitious and stuff, and I actually do think it's a bit of a blessing that he looks like the perfect combination of both of us, because it allows both sides of the family to say this... not this is mine, but this is ours.
Yeah.
Like my dad once said to me, you act like you say he's your, you know, child. Lena and Catherine, he's your child, Elliot. But he's not. He's the family's child. He is now part of all of us. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was just such a beautiful thing to say.
Well, that is lovely. And it gives us a nice opportunity to go into the next track. And so we're going to put some music on and then come back and continue chatting with the three of you. And you're on Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Okay, welcome back to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9. We're with Alina, Catherine and Elliot today, talking about a whole bunch of things, ethnicity, child rearing, bicultural couples and whatnot. And we also had some music. And so, Catherine, you're going to tell us about why that track, who is it and what's the song and why did you pick it?
Yeah. Well, actually, that was my brother's song.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just trying to come up with a concept called the Music Box, and he's wanting to write and sing and play music, and kids can have like an actual music box to go with the CD, so they can listen to the songs and then kind of follow the follow the instructions, so they can bang on the drum and shake the maracas and stuff at the same time. So
very cool. Do you want to give him a plug? Is his product available yet?
It's not available yet. It's still in concept stage, but it will be called the Music Box, so keep your eye out for it,
because
we're sure he's going to be a star. His name is John Roberts. It's a very Anglo name.
Indeed it is.
But yeah, the product and the idea is called the Music Box, and we're very excited about it and hope it does really well.
Excellent. Well, I hope so too. It was a catchy tune.
It's been in my head all week.
I did find myself tapping my toes, and
that's
Elliot
right.
seemed to like it.
He did like it.
It down right away. So when did you decide, and how did you decide to go down the path of becoming parents? How soon into your relationship and that kind of thing?
You know what? I mean, I think it was we probably had the sort of feeling out conversation, you know, within the first couple of weeks of meeting each other, just sort of, you know, we met in our late 20s, and you sort of think, well, if you're going to have a relationship with somebody that's sort of long term, you kind of want to be on the same page about what the next 10 years, you know, plus is going to be about.
Yeah.
And we, for both of us, I think having children was on the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, it sort of felt like a bit of a wishful agenda. I don't know whether I ever really thought it would actually happen, because it just, you know, I think growing up and as a teenager and in our early 20s, you didn't see that many rainbow families, and there wasn't the same kind of visibility in the community as there is now. So it wasn't quite as achievable.
I call straight people breeders when I was growing up. Oops. We are now breeders.
Yeah. Well, I think I wrote an essay actually when I was at uni called The Institution of Motherhood, and being quite anti. So.
Wow. So you've both come quite a long way.
That's right.
You also mentioned children in the plural.
Yes. No, number two on the way just yet, but it's definitely on the cards.
It's on the cards.
On the cards, yeah. So, yeah, we sort of sussed each other out fairly early on, and then we went to a Rainbow Families conference together about maybe a year and a half into our relationship.
2006, yeah.
Okay, yeah, so a year and a bit into our relationship, we went off to a conference and sort of started thinking about how and when and, you know, why.
Yeah, the more important question,
that's right. And then we explored sort of a few different options and got quite a way down the track, actually, with a very good friend of ours in terms of, it was still at the talking stage, but talking about having a known donor.
Yep.
And in the end, just decided that probably wasn't going to be the right arrangement for us.
Yep.
And thankfully the friendship survived that. So that's
good.
That's all good. And then, yeah, then it was all, you know, the clinics and which procedure and what kind of donor and
yep. And did you have to go to New South Wales?
We went to Canberra.
Okay.
We went to Canberra. So we started our process just before the laws changed Victoria. So we accessed Canberra. In the end, it was probably a good thing because they have existing partnerships set up with a lot of overseas donor agencies.
Okay.
So we had access to thousands of potential donors, which meant we could explore donors of different ethnicities.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, whereas I know in Victoria now, even though there's greater access, I think the range of donors is very restricted, and I think they're all very Anglo.
Okay.
Which wouldn't have been ideal for us.
Yeah. And so just for listeners who don't know what law changed in Victoria and why we went to the ACT.
Sure. Yep. Sorry. So up until very recently,
January 2009, did the Assisted Reproductive Technology Act of 2008.
Oh, okay, right.
Says the lawyer.
Yeah,
Catherine's a lawyer too.
I just don't remember things like that. Anyway, so up until that legal amendment, assisted reproductive technology in Victoria was only accessible to women who had a medical infertility issue, basically. So. It wasn't actually as explicit as, you know, you have to be in a heterosexual relationship to have this treatment. But it did say that if you're a lesbian and you don't have any fertility issues and the only reason you're not going to get pregnant is because you don't have a male partner, then you're not going to be able to access it. So they've now opened up the definition. I think it's a woman who is unlikely to conceive naturally. And I definitely fit within that category. That's right. So that has opened it up to lesbian couples.
And so you've already raised, we already know that you are Elliot's biological mother.
Yes.
And so how did you make that decision?
I think I had always envisaged that I would carry children as well. It was sort of, and now having gone through it, I sort of think, oh,
why? What was I thinking?
No, look, it was a really kind of precious kind of experience to have, and I think the bond is different, I think.
Okay.
I suppose it's more immediate, I should say. I guess the other thing was that for me to carry was a lot more medically straightforward.
Okay.
I don't have any health issues at all, touch wood, very lucky.
Yeah.
Whereas Elena does have a couple of health issues which would have just complicated the process a bit more. So we thought it's already kind of complicated the way we're doing it. Let's make it as simple as we can.
And did it take a good long time? I know this process can sometimes take years and years.
Yeah.
My girl is really fertile.
Knocked her up in one go.
Wow, you're a one-shot girl.
Well, very lucky. Yeah. Wow, we couldn't quite believe it.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you said you were in your late 20s or had you passed 30 at that point?
Yeah, how old was I? 32.
Wow.
I was 32.
Yeah. I am very impressed.
Yeah.
And she still wants to go back and do it again.
I guess the only other thing I would say in terms of that whole process was the selection of an appropriate donor.
Yeah, and how did you?
I can hand over to Elena at this point.
Oh, look, I mean, it's very weird when you're selecting an anonymous donor because it's not a supermarket trolley where you're just going up and down going, I might have that one, might have that one. You have to think about, well, a little person's going to come out of this. What would you want to tell that little person when that little person asks, you know, all right, I don't have a daddy. I don't have someone, you know, a male dad, but why did you choose that person or what was the reason for it? And so ethnicity was a major reason. I mean, that was the number one driver in that, you know, it was, well, I can't have a biological connection with Elliot, but I could have an ethnic connection. And through that connection, I could teach him about my culture and where I come from. And that would also be from where he comes from. And we got really, really lucky because we got a donor from an Indian donor. So, and we know what he looks like. We have photos of him as an adult and photos of him as a baby. And he could have been in my family. Like, he's got the same kind of olivey skin. Mm-hmm. I'm reasonably light skin for a Pakistani, and he's very Northern Indian,
okay,
which looks a lot like my family. Like, my mum's quite light skinned. So we really got lucky in that. And the other thing is that they, on this particular sperm bank, there's no other nice word for it, they have a sperm bank. They write essays as to why they're donating.
Wow.
And we really liked his.
Yeah.
Like, he just sounded humble, which is a character trait, a good one of Indians, mm-hmm, and Pakistanis, like just that kind of humility. And he had that kind of and he had that warmth in his essay and his as to why. I mean, having said that, we did have a couple of giggles over our
other ones.
I won't mention the ethnicity, but there was a certain brilliant chess champ, you can work it out from where he was from, who when he was asked why would you want to donate, most people were asked to write one sentence and then go into a whole short story paragraph. He not only wrote the short story paragraph, it was the one sentence that cracked us up, because it was,
"I have excellent genes."
So we went, "Ah, okay, maybe not."
I wonder if anybody's going to pick that. But anyway, that's...
Well, he held himself out as a genius.
Yeah, he said he was a genius
And an athlete and, this sort of Superman type person.
But then again, culturally, that is his particular nation are actually like that. So,
not making any generalisations.
No, but it's true. I can say Indians are humble. Then why can't I say, and...
Generalisations are okay. It's stereotypes are inappropriate. People all the time.
That's true.
But I
actually learnt that from a really good course I went to.
So would you recommend this process to other same-sex couples to go down the path that you've gone down? Or because you rejected the going with a friend, and lots of people do go down that route.
I'm going to throw my two cents in first because I'm itching to say this. Look, I think it's really based on your relationship.
Yep.
We're both very strong, independent women, so much so that we're quite in our relationship. Like this morning, we're like snapping and biting each other's heads off of something really silly and stupid. But we are so strong, and
I think controlling is the word.
Okay, at this point,
I say that applies to me equally.
Yes. Good, otherwise I'd sing my version of "Old MacDonald Has
That's
a Farm."
Right. Yeah, we have our own version of that. It's not very nice to sing on air, though.
Yeah, Mummy nag nags here and a fuss fuss is there.
But and Mama's a grouch grouch here and a grump grump there.
Yeah,
nice.
Nice, happy children's songs. But the thing is that what I'm trying to get across is that you really have to look at your relationship and see, do you have space for a third person? Because no matter what the arrangement you might make with that third person, there will be a third person in your child's life. And if you can do it, I say good on you, because that's basically what you want to do and that works for your family. So I don't judge, and I don't know any better. I just know what works for us.
Yep.
And so my advice would be, look at your relationship strongly, see whether it is a relationship which can or wants a third person involved in whatever capacity possible. Because once that little person gets there, you can't really change your mind and go, well, actually... never mind. Or, no, I want you a lot more involved or a lot less. I mean, you can't do that to the child.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's great. Let's go. We've got a bit more music to play. You've got two shortish tracks. So I'm going to put the first one on, and then we'll put the second one on, and then we'll come back and finish talking with you about... Elliot, basically. You're on Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Somebody out there who didn't sign their name is jealous to hear about Catherine and Alina's story and to hear their beautiful child, Elliot, in the background. So thank you so much for your message. We also had somebody who thinks that asking about Anglo-Saxon identity is an insensitive thing to do, and I don't quite understand the comment. But, of course, we're all free to have our own feelings about this stuff. As an Anglo person in this society, I have never been asked about my ethnicity, and so prefacing it by saying so doesn't seem to be insensitive to me, and I challenge any Anglo out there to come up with more than a handful of times they've ever been asked. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Let's get back to the music and the story of Catherine, Alina, and Elliot. You're listening to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
We are back with Catherine, Alina, and Elliot has taken a respite from being in the studio. So it's just the three of us now, and you're on Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9. And that was some interesting, shall we say,
sounds,
music.
Sounds
that you've chosen for us today. What are they, and why those?
Well, the first track was perfectly respectable. The water piece, which we used to make him, when he was little, put Baby Einstein on a lot, the video, until I read somewhere that even babies shouldn't have any exposure to television, so now I've gone crazy on that too. So it tells you my parenting style. But that's we like to play classical music because it does soothe children, that's for sure. But
sometimes I put the morning show on the weekdays.
I'm pretending I didn't hear that. I am a proud snob. And the next track was The Sounds of Silence, which basically is a compilation of what it would sound like in the womb.
Okay.
We were given this from a friend who we were at their house and they had a young baby, and I actually said, I got quite distressed because I heard this music playing and I thought it was kind of, you know, death cult vampire goth satanic
verses,
you know,
yeah.
complete freaky stuff, and I just, you know, and they're quite boring conservative lawyers, so I was a little bit confused what was going on since you've had a kid. And he burnt me a copy, and I initially thought, oh look, this, you know, may or may not work, but we now use it as a day CD because it is quite noisy. And if you think about it, you can never have perfect silence for a child, and if you try and raise a child in perfect silence, you're doomed for failure. You will. The doorbell will ring, the dog will bark, someone will there. So we play this in the day because it isn't super soothing as what we would think is soothing, but it is noisy like it is or was in the womb. So it actually does work so that when he's having one of his day naps, we play it and he falls asleep during it.
Very cool. Can you sleep with it?
Yeah. Look, we've sort of adjusted anything.
You get
we've
so tired now, don't you? Then.
Yeah. I can sleep through anything now.
We joke about how we have our own sleep cycles now because we work on the basis of, I had a 35.
I prefer World Baby, the Celtic lullabies.
Yeah. So how have you negotiated your roles since having Elliot? You've mentioned that you're out 5 days a week. You're out, was it 3 days a week? And I'm pointing at Alina and Catherine respectively there. But how else have you negotiated who does what? And
I think it's a constant negotiation.
Fight. Battle.
Controlling people.
I guess, you know, because this particular kind of division of labour is totally new to us.
Gendered.
Gendered
issues.
And often, you know, I mean, that division does bring with it lots of kind of gender politics as well, and which doesn't quite apply yet. It's really interesting how those issues start to manifest and kind of play out. Sort of, particularly when I was at home full time for the first 10 to 11 months.
Okay,
you know, Alina would come home from work
exhausted,
and just, tired, and a bit grumpy, or you know, and I'd just kind of pounce on her for some,
wave the feminine mystique around in my face.
Just like, you know, can I
take the baby?
Okay, first of all, take the baby, and now can you please entertain me because I need some intellectual stimulation? And she'd just be like, oh, can we talk later? I just
give me
like,
my beer.
Can we talk later? I've had a really hard day, and it's just like, but I haven't had any conversation. You know, it's been winter. I've just been stuck at home with him, and he's been crying all day, and I'm going out of my, you know, out of my mind. And so we sort of, you know, I think those issues were more accentuated in that first period.
Yep.
And now I've been back at work 3 days a week for the last three or so months.
Yep.
And we're kind of having to renegotiate all that and sort of share things, you know, share the nights a bit more and, you know, even the kind of evening routine and things like that. But we're still kind of figuring it out. And I think it's important to be really honest about that. It's really hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard negotiating those roles because it's all new and, it's difficult to juggle.
It's extremely difficult to juggle because I look at all the males I work with who work 5 days like I do, and they go home and they're not expected to you know, drop everything and change their kid and feed their kid and everything, and I am. And I resent that because I get jealous that, you know, that they get to go home and chill and relax, and then if they – and they can offer to help. Yeah. It's not expected. I mean, yeah. They're meant to give up their weekends, and that's what I do, and happily, because I want to spend my weekends with him. But weeknights, I still continue to find it difficult, especially if it's been a particular tough day. What has happened, as Catherine says, she's gone back to work in February, and now Catherine's got a better idea, because now Catherine has bad work days and will come home and will just, you know, will be like, hey, you know, oh, I had a lousy day. So I'll then get up and I'll share it, you know, a little bit more evenly. It is impossible for us to be even because Catherine is the primary caregiver. There was the chance that I was going to do this interview and Catherine not be here. And I said to Barb that I can't do it without Catherine. She could come and do it, you know, because she's with Elliot 24/7 pretty much, but I'm not. Mm-hmm. And so even though he knows me inside out and I know him, I wouldn't feel right not having her here, because she does put in that extra effort that I don't, and not because I don't want to, it's just because most of my energy is tied up at work and outside of work and worrying about all the things that will affect home. So it does end up being some kind of weird gender division, even though you don't want to do that. I do like the fact that we are more even now, in that, as I said, Catherine understands it, but I don't like the fact that I have to do more nights now, because I didn't have to, and now I have to do three nights a week to Catherine's four, and it was so much easier when I only had to do one.
I wanted to just go, we only have a couple of minutes left, but I did want to ask if you've become more Anglo or more Pakistani-Australian since having had a child and trying to, you know, sort of create a world for him that in some ways parallels the world you might have had growing up. And I don't know if you can do that at all, or if you've just created a third culture and you're happy with that. But just wanted to go down that path briefly.
I do sing some lullabies to him in Urdu that I have no idea what I'm singing, but I've learnt them from Alina and her family, and they seem to work.
Yeah. At some point, you're going to learn the words, what they mean.
Oh, maybe.
I don't always translate very well.
Yeah.
No. I think he's going to have a really good sort of combination of the two, because there are also parts of Alina's culture that marry really well with Australian culture as well. I mean, you know, the love of cricket. If this boy doesn't like cricket, I feel really sorry for him. She's already threatening to permanently mark our driveway with a cricket pitch. I have to put my foot down on that and say chalk, please.
I don't want pavement chalk. On a
chalk,
painter.
Chalk.
Painter.
So, I mean, look, I think probably if you had to kind of pick one that's had more influence, it's probably Alina's, but maybe that's just kind of because
she's got a bigger family.
Well, and as you said, it's, to me, it's more visible, whereas, you know, I'm probably doing a lot of things with him that I'm doing just because that's what my mother did with me, and not ascribing a particular culture to it. So
you're making me eat Vegemite. I don't like Vegemite.
He does eat Vegemite.
He likes Vegemite. But I think with the cultural thing, or the cultural point, I myself am finding it more important for me to reconnect. Like language, Catherine mentioned Urdu. I never got to learn it properly because moving between countries, I missed out on that.
Yep.
I can speak it, but I sound like a Westerner trying to speak another language, and people laugh at me. I don't speak authentically. I mean, cab drivers can't understand me. They giggle. So it's important, though, for me, for our son to know that language, that it doesn't just end with me. And so I try to speak to him, and we use words. I mean, his nickname, which we call him more by, is a Urdu word, which we have actually, that's probably the best example. It's an Urdu word which we've anglicised or Australianised and turned into a brand new word. So
what's the word and what do you use?
Okay, the actual word, well, it's already kind of it's not an actual word. It's chortu.
Chortu is the, yeah, but chorta. A chorta is a small boy, a chorta bacha, small baby, chorta. Okay. Chorta.
So chortu is kind of an endearing kind of version of it. And being... being sort of embarrassingly Australian, I've shortened it to Chorts. Yeah.
So we call him Chorts, Chortu, and Mr. Chortini as well. So
just
any answers,
a little Italian
change.
Yeah.
That's right.
Any answers to all of them, like you go Chorts, and he'll turn his head. So,
Very cool. My
family love that we call him Chortu as well. Like they think that's,
and they're quite amused that it's become Chorts.
But I have to say that it's hilarious hearing my mother-in-law with her English Australian accent attempt to say Chortu, because everyone else, Catherine's brother, Catherine's family, everyone can say Chortu, but my mother-in-law says, choo-choo. And I'm like, he's not a train, but okay, choo-choo.
It's very cute.
It is cute.
And it's a lovely symbol for the world you've created for the three of you and potentially someday four, five, six of you. How many of
please,
you are going
please.
To be?
Well, I used to have nightmares that I was going to be Octomum, but I've been assured that that's medically impossible.
I have requested twins next time. I figure just get out of the way, just get two more and we're done. Yeah. Like, that's me just being practical.
Yeah, and the non-bio mum.
And going back to work.
Yeah, indeed. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you taking time out of your Saturday to come and talk to us on Joy. And thank Elliot as well when you're out with
him. He's demolishing a mandarin as we speak.
Excellent. Thanks so much. And you've been listening to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
And that was the Ronettes, or a piece of the Ronettes anyway, with Be My Baby as an appropriate track to end off that delightful interview with Alina and Catherine. If you have contributions you'd like to make to Orange Ribbon, please contact us via our Facebook page, or just 0427JOY949 is the SMS here at the station. And I'm sure Shane on the frequency will pass the message along. We're going to pass the word on, though, to Byron first, who's got the news here on Joy. Hope you have a terrific weekend, and this again has been Orange Ribbon.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.